live from around the world, it's time for Peter Greenberg Worldwide with America's number one frontline travel news journalist. Get on the phone now and call 1-888-887-3837. That's 1-888-88-PETER. And now, the man who travels over 400,000 miles each year, the travel detective, Peter Greenberg.
And welcome aboard another edition of Peter Greenberg Worldwide. I hope you're having a wonderful Halloween weekend wherever you happen to be. We've been all over the world, as you might imagine. Last week, the show came to you from the Savoy in London. We've crossed a few time zones since there. Get out your maps, boys and girls. We're 29 degrees, 59 minutes north, 90 degrees, 15 minutes west. Yes, we've traveled quite a ways. We're coming to you from the Hotel Monteleone in New Orleans, Louisiana. We're taking your calls at 888-887-3837. That's 888-88-PETER. And if you can't get through on the phones, you know the drill, boys and girls. Always email me to peter@petergreenberg.com with your name, phone number, question, or problem. We'll solve it right here on the air. Lots of news this week, starting out with, of course, the hearings at the National Transportation Safety Board about those ugly two words that we've come to know and hate called code sharing and the misleading opportunities that code sharing has for us to misunderstand what actual airline we're flying on. It all goes back, it doesn't go all the way back to that, but it was, of course, made public by the terrible crash of the Colgan Air Flight in Buffalo, New York, back in 2009. The plane had a Continental logo on the tail. It had Continental colors. The people who bought tickets on that flight were given Continental tickets. They got Continental mileage. And yet the airline was not operated by Continental. It was operated by Colgan Air with two regional pilots who were not properly trained, didn't have the experience, and when something happened up there, they did the exact wrong thing and caused the deaths of a lot of people. That, of course, you know, called into question amount of training, minimum number of hours, and whether the airlines are fully disclosing who's really operating the regional flights that bear their colors and their livery. And I would tell you that most people would think that an airline called Continental Express is flown by Continental, or that American Eagle is flown by American, or that Comair is flown by Delta. Times are different out there now, and just because an airline has a four-digit flight doesn't necessarily mean it's a regional carrier. It means it's a code-share flight. Let's say an American Airlines flight to Spain might be operated by Iberia, and all of a sudden has a four-digit flight number. You think you're flying American, but you're flying Iberia. Okay, that's one thing if you're flying intercontinental flights. But within this country, a lot of confusion, and the NTSB is having hearings on it, and we will be monitoring that for you, of course, as we continue. One other thing that's happening, you got to hand it to the guys at British Airways. You know, when the volcano was erupting, Willie Walsh, who's their chairman, got angry at the authorities for not letting them fly their planes, and he finally said, you know what, the heck with this, I'm going to fly one anyway. And he took a 747, he flew it from JFK to London, and I said at that moment, if they let that plane land, tomorrow we'll all be flying. Guess what? They let the plane land, and the next day we're all flying, so three cheers for Willie Walsh. Well, listen to this. A British Airways official, another high official, basically lashed out at redundant U.S. security demands, and basically said that, this is a quote now, the security checks required by Americans are completely redundant. He also criticized the United States. You know, we don't need to take off our shoes. We don't need to remove our laptops, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And, of course, the TSA disagrees with that at the same time that they're doing the scanning machines. And interesting stuff about that. The jury is still out on that. First of all, it takes longer to do the scan. For those of you who have been through it, you know what I'm talking about. The TSA is somewhat confused about who's actually operating the machine because I have this vision of some guy named Byrne in a garage watching the image of you, and then he has to basically radio back to say that you're okay, not having seen you. It's sort of like a game of musical chairs or the hokey pokey. I haven't figured out what it is, but this is a situation where, you know, they went out and spent billions of dollars on this technology, and I'm not so sure it's really helping us. So more on that. And then, of course, the age-old question, how much should you heed State Department warnings or State Department advisories? You know, earlier this month, on October 3rd, the U.S. State Department issued a travel alert warning U.S. citizens of the potential for terrorist attacks in Europe. Well, what do you know? What a great warning that is. How helpful is that when there are no specific threats, when there are no specific targets, where there's no specific advice other than be aware? I mean, come on, guys. If you're going to warn me, give me a little more information than that. Like, don't turn left, or duck, or you might not want to go to this particular building at 8 o'clock in the morning. Issuing an advisory saying, oh, there could be potential terrorist threats, and by the way, be aware, you know what? It's like going to a railroad crossing. Okay, stop, look, and listen, okay? If there's no train, you cross the tracks. I mean, what else can you do? I mean, it's a little silly. And at a certain point, we begin to even ignore those because they don't resonate with us because we can't relate to them. You can't relate to a warning that doesn't give you any specific information to help you. You know, that's like saying, when staying up late at night, don't forget to get enough rest. Oh, okay. I mean, that's not really helping me. Basic common sense would prevail here, and basic common sense would also dictate that if you're going to issue a warning, give me, especially if you have credible information that there might be a terrorist threat, and by the way, I definitely want to hear about that, give me specific information so I can adequately prepare to the best of my ability. To do anything else is to essentially, even with the best of intentions, mislead me. Now, here we are in New Orleans, a city in which I'm convinced is haunted, a city in which I've always convinced has a subterranean culture that comes out late at night, and that's why basically when they wake up at around 3 in the morning. I mean, you got to love a city if you love ghosts where everybody's buried above ground. I mean, they should have shot Michael Jackson's Thriller right here. They didn't need to build a set. Just get out there across from Commander's Palace at one of those graveyards and just turn the lights on and dance. I mean, that's all you got to do. And on this Halloween weekend, I guarantee you this city comes alive. If you get the pun, with everybody who is on a mission to celebrate the ghosts, the goblins, the apparitions, and the things that go bump in the night. And I'm convinced in New Orleans they probably go bump in the day as well. They're just not, you know, they're not overly forward about it. But later on the show, we're going to tell you about all the great haunted hotels that are out there. Of course, these hotels aren't just haunted on Halloween. Uh-uh. They're the gift that keeps on giving. They're haunted all year round. Ranging from a haunted prison to a hotel up near Cooperstown, home of course, the Baseball Hall of Fame, to one in Mendocino, to one in Nantucket, to one in the Poconos. And, of course, this particular hotel, the Monteleone, has a long history, a legacy of very famous ghosts. We'll be talking about all of that, so get ready to be scared. Of course, there's no discount for that when you check into your room because sometimes these guests check in and they have not checked out for about 150 years. So we'll be back with some of those tales from Halloween weekend at the Hotel Monteleone in New Orleans, Louisiana. Back with more of Peter Greenberg Worldwide with our good friend Annie Bannis from Smarter Travel on a lot of the do's and don'ts for this holiday season that may just haunt you even more. Thank you, airlines. We'll be right back right after these messages.
The Peter Greenberg Worldwide phone lines are open now, so call us at 1-888-887-3837. That's 1-888-88-PETER. Got a travel question or comment? Need advice? Jump on board now by calling the show at 1-888-88-PETER. That's 1-888-887-3837. Once again, here's your host, Peter Greenberg.
18 minutes after the hour, Peter Greenberg coming to you from the Hotel Monteleone on this Halloween weekend in New Orleans, Louisiana, taking your calls at 888-887-3837. That's 888-88-PETER. If you can't get through on the phones, you know the drill, boys and girls. You email me to peter@petergreenberg.com with your name, your phone number, your question, or your travel problem. We will solve it right here on the air. And as we do every week at this time, I encourage you to go to our website, which has the imaginative name. We hired consultants for this one, petergreenberg.com, for one important reason, to check out our resource list of all the aid and relief organizations. It's a comprehensive list that are doing all that essential hard work in Haiti, There's been a cholera outbreak. They need us more than ever in western China, in Chile, where they had an earthquake earlier this year, and, of course, in the Gulf of Mexico, still cleaning up after the oil spill. It may not be front-page news where you're living. It's still front-page news right here on this show, and you might surprise yourself when you see all the different organizations that are doing that work that you can relate to. More importantly, you can get physically, actively, and personally involved. It's the best vacation you can give yourself because it's a vacation where you give back to others, and that gives back to you for years and years to come. Remember, the rebuilding effort in Haiti, it's at least a generation, if not longer. They really need your help. Don't forget these people. Check out our website, petergreenberg.com, for that list of aid and relief organizations. Speaking of aid and relief, we always go to this woman for aid and relief when it comes to the actual process of travel. She's the executive editor for smartertravel.com, Annie Bannis. Hey, Annie.
Hey, Peter. How's it going?
Well, happy Halloween. I know that we've all been haunted by the airports every other day of the year, so why should today be any different?
No different at all, that's for sure.
Although, you know, it's the holiday season, so people need to understand that if they're packing gifts for grandma, the last thing they want to do is take a fruitcake on board, right?
Absolutely. There's a lot of incentive to pack light when you're traveling for the holidays, and obviously airline fees are really high. You know, if you're considering bringing gifts, you might want to think about maybe buying something online, having it shipped directly. There's a lot of, you know, free shipping codes you can get around the holidays, or ship your packages because, you know, TSA, you know, also might unwrap those packages or go through your stuff, and you're spending extra money anyway. So just simplify the process.
And I got a better one for you on this one. If you're going to go shopping and you're not at a major national chain store or a chain brand store, but it's an independent store, it could be. This is a great opportunity to support independent bookstores, by the way, and you want to buy gifts or books for your friends and your family, have them ship it, because if they do that, you don't pay state taxes.
Oh, brilliant. Yeah, great idea.
And the cost of shipping will be less than the taxes you would be paying if you didn't ship it. So there's a thought right there. I'll tell you something else. You know, the airlines nickel and diming us for every cost on the plane. Earlier this week, I was on a Delta Airlines flight from Las Vegas to Atlanta. And, you know, October is National Breast Cancer Awareness Month. And they did something really cool on the flight. They went up and down the aisle, and they offered you pink lemonade. And if you paid $2, they made a donation to the Susan G. Komen Foundation for Breast Cancer Awareness. I just whipped out the credit card and had a pink lemonade. I was happy to spend the money for the soft drink.
Wow, that's really great.
I think if the airlines did that 24/7, 12 months a year, people would be happy to spend the money because it would be going to a good cause.
Exactly, definitely.
Yeah, I agree. Okay, so you can't bring the fruitcake. Why?
Well, fruitcake is very dense, and that's part of the reason a lot of people say they don't like it, and you know, but it's kind of
Annie,
a joke. Because
Annie, fruitcake is a weapon.
It can be.
You realize that I'm totally convinced that this time of the year, when they do the fruitcakes, it's a look one. Just pick it up and try to carry it. If you dropped it out of a plane, you could actually end certain wars. It would kill people.
I actually just came back from Germany, and I picked up a Dresden Stollen, and it weighed like 2 kilos. I'm surprised Lufthansa actually let me bring it because it was making my luggage overweight. But
Annie,
I got through.
Annie, did you eat it all?
You know, technically, it's illegal to eat it before the holiday season. So.
Okay, so you're pleading the fifth, but you ate it, didn't you?
I might have had a little sample.
Yeah, you did. Okay, you're busted.
It does get better with age, so we'll see.
Well, let's talk. Well, listen, with fruitcakes, they have carbon dating for that now.
I'm not surprised. Really?
No, I'm joking.
Okay. Wait, how far back does this go? Have they uncovered a fruitcake from years bygone?
Oh, I'm sure they have. As a matter of fact, you want to know something? They have, and I'm being totally serious. If anybody is going to go visit Stockholm in Sweden, one of the most amazing museums you will ever see is basically they built the museum over the ship that they raised from the bottom of the river there, and it's called the Vasa. And it was the biggest ship of its time when Sweden had an armada and the biggest navy in the world. And it's an amazing story that when they launched the ship, it was a beautiful, brand-new ship. As they launched it off the waves and it hit the water, a gust of wind came up, and it capsized the ship, and it sank right there with all aboard. But the quality of the water for the last 400 years was so good that in 1958, when they discovered it was still there, they sent divers down, and what did they find? It was still intact. So intact that some of the food was still there.
That's hilarious.
And they realized that if they just raised the ship, it would oxidize and disintegrate. So they built the museum first and then raised the ship into the museum. And you need to go visit this. It is just fascinating. And I'm not making this up now, Annie. We just talked about fruitcake. I actually saw a piece of fruitcake on that ship.
Oh, that's really funny.
I know.
Well, I never actually answer your question, but, you know, fruitcake, I think it is a pretty, you know, like I said, dense and hearty, long-living kind of baked good. But part of the problem is if you do bring it in your carry-on luggage and you want to get it through security, the security scanners can't see through it. So oftentimes it causes problems and could get confiscated, and that's kind of, we always make the joke, don't bring the fruitcake. But you know, most people, you know, say, it's okay. I don't really need the fruitcake.
Or what you can do is the next time you're going through security, just ask all the TSA guys, hey, how is that fruitcake?
Yeah, because you know that they're confiscating it and maybe having a little snack, too.
They're in the back room chowing down on fruitcake, boy. And that's why some of those guys look so heavy.
Yeah, that's exactly.
All right, but, you know, here we are. It's the holiday season. Everybody's getting nickel and dime with bag fees. They're getting nickel and dime with food, other than that $2, you know, pink lemonade that I ordered on Delta. Okay, what charges can you possibly avoid, Annie?
Well, for the past 2 years, airlines have been adding holiday surcharges, which, you know, it's not too different. I mean, airlines have always traditionally charged extra for peak travel days, but these are very specific surcharges of about $10 to $20 each. Depending on the length of your flight and, you know, the destinations you're going to. So
yeah,
I would
but you know what's interesting, though, Annie? That you're right. They used to charge the surcharges that would be like the Wednesday before Thanksgiving or the Sunday after Thanksgiving. But this year, every single day I can look at, with the exception of Thanksgiving Day and Christmas Day, there's a surcharge.
There's a surcharge, yeah. The way you can get around it, though, some airlines aren't charging them. I believe, you know, your classic customer-friendly airlines like JetBlue, Southwest, I think maybe even Virgin America. And but always just do a comprehensive search and just make sure you do all the math. You know, you factor in the, you know, different dates that might be cheaper or more expensive than others. Factor in maybe some alternate airports, you know, at both ends of your travel, whether at your departure city or arrival city. And, you know, do the math and add in those fees. And that's how you're really going to know if you're getting a good, the best fare available for the dates and times when you want to go.
What gets me a little angry is that when you go online to make a reservation, all of a sudden all these other charges come up, but you've got to opt out of them on some of these websites from the airlines. It means if you don't hit the button saying you don't want it, you're going to get charged for it. There's a charge that American came up with, which I think is just amazing, up to $39 to pre-board and sit closer to first class. To me, why would I want to sit closer to chocolate chip cookies I can't have?
Very excellent point. And then they pull that curtain in front of you. It makes you even feel more marginalized on the aircraft.
I mean, here's what I think they should do. Everybody sitting in coach should be at the kids' table and just throw chicken fingers at them.
Not a bad idea.
Right? Just have it catered by Kentucky Fried Chicken and just go for it. I mean, you know, that's all you need to do. But I think that $39 charge is absurd to pre-board a flight where, and by the way, those coach tickets or those coach seats that they think are premium seats towards the front of the first class set or the front of the coach section, they even determine that those middle seats are premium seats. How absurd is that?
Oh, yeah. It really doesn't make sense. I mean, they're finding kind of charging for not necessarily items that might be necessary. You know, most people need to take a bag or they, you know, need to, you know, send their kids for unaccompanied minor or whatever. But now a lot of the airlines are coming up with fees that just feel very gratuitous. It's like, oh, we'll give you this service and you'll find it so useful. And I can't even think through what type of passenger would want to pay for something like that. It just doesn't make a lot of sense, and it's expensive.
I know. And by the way, I'm looking at some of these airlines that are charging up to $40 for a day pass at their clubs. Why would you do that?
Yeah, you're not. It's just not going to be worth it at all. It's just, you know, things that people aren't going to need. It's just going to cost them more for their trip. And in the end, it's just another way for airlines to make more money.
And by the way, by the end of this year, they will have generated worldwide nearly $13 billion in what they call ancillary revenue. Ouch.
Yeah, and to add insult to injury, fares are going up.
I know. Who are you going to call? Ghostbusters. That's it. Annie Bannis from SmarterTravel.com. Annie, thanks for joining us. And speaking of Ghostbusters, coming up, Larry Montz from the International Society of Paranormal Research. Ooh.
To participate in the program and speak with Peter Greenberg, call 1-888-887-3837. Or visit petergreenberg.com. This segment of Peter Greenberg Worldwide is proudly brought to you by
Avis. Avis, we try harder.
Now back to Peter Greenberg.
33 minutes after the hour, coming to you from the Hotel Monteleone here in New Orleans, a hotel that claims it's also haunted. And how appropriate, because it's Halloween weekend. Taking your calls at 888-887-3837. That's 888-88-PETER. If you can't get through on the phones, you know the drill, boys and girls. You email me to peter@petergreenberg.com. Or perhaps you could just telekinetically send me a message if you're one of those people. In fact, joining me now might be one of those people. Larry Montz from the International Society of Paranormal Research and an old buddy of mine. Hey, Larry.
Hi, Peter. How are you?
I'm okay. Last time I saw you, we were traipsing around New Orleans late at night, weren't we?
Yes, we were.
And
ghost hunting. That's right.
We were ghost hunting in some old abandoned buildings and scared the you-know-what out of me.
Uh-huh. I remember.
Wow. Well, you know, I'm one of those people who always believes, I said this at the opening of the show, you probably didn't hear it, but every time I've come to New Orleans, I'm totally convinced there's a subterranean energy here among the living. Forget the other, forget the dead. I think energy among the living, where the minute I land at the airport, they already know I'm here. They already know where I'm going. You know, it's like, oh, we've been expecting you. It's like, ah! You know, right?
That's right. It's a small city, I'll tell you.
Now, how long have you been coming to New Orleans?
Well, you know, Peter, ironically, I grew up in New Orleans originally. And so I've been working professionally on investigations in New Orleans, though, since 1972.
All right. So, but what got you involved in that?
Well, I had a curator of a property in the French Quarter, the Beauregard Kai's house, years ago. And I would go over there and visit, of course, you know, and play with the other kids and so on, as I was only like 10 or 11 years old. And I started having experiences. And I would see a young lady in a gray dress with black hair, you know, and she would appear and disappear and walk through walls. And instead of being afraid, I was like, wow, I want to be able to do that. So
basically, when did you stop taking the acid?
Yeah, really. No, but I'll tell you, you know, I really started taking it seriously as I was in school and so on, and going through, you know, computers and electrical engineering and all kinds of other things, decided, well, let me apply everything that I know, you know, to this and try to find out how and why this phenomenon takes place.
Okay, I've got to ask a stupid question, because a lot of the hotels that I've done stories on, I do it every year, all those years on the Today Show, now on CBS, where you do stories on haunted hotels. Mm-hmm. Almost every haunted hotel, the stories that they tell either involve a young child or a woman who was left at the altar.
Yeah, you know, and to tell you the truth, I have found children, but I have not found people left at the altar. So it seems to be, you know, something that everyone wants to believe in, but the hotels, especially nowadays, you know, they will tell you, if you don't have a ghost, get one.
Is there like a ghost registry now? You can actually like go and get one?
No, but you know, it's kind of funny because I worked on the Del Coronado Hotel in San Diego years ago.
Okay, now the Del Coronado's got the woman. The woman is there.
That's right. And the story is not really that correct, but the woman is there, and she was murdered by her husband outside of the hotel. So, you know, it just depends on the situation. You know, we've got a number of people.
Well, we'll talk about the Monteleone when we come back, but the woman in Coronado, did you ever see her?
We did briefly see her. One of the clairvoyants on the team did communicate briefly with her, and that's how we were able to garner the correct information. And there are other people who float around there as well.
Wow. Well, you know, I'm always amazed, you know, because they're always on balconies. They're always on the second story. They're never in the lobby. Am I right?
No, you know, it's kind of funny because people also like to say, well, gee, I have a ghost in my property, but they only reside in this particular room or on this particular floor. They only hang out in the attic. And, you know, realistically, if a place is haunted, it's haunted. So,
by the way, do you ever notice that there are no ghosts in the presidential suite? There are no ghosts in suites. They're always ghosts in small rooms that they can rent out for $59 a night. You know, it's amazing to me.
That's right. No real expensive ghost. I mean, what can you do? You know. Now, however, the Le Pavillon Hotel does have expensive rooms with ghosts in them. So,
Oh yeah, every once in a while, there's an exception to the rule, but with all due respect, there are some very credible stories told by very credible guests who were not necessarily reading up on it, so we could rule out
right.
maybe you know, like suggestibility, where
sure.
they start telling the same story about the same ghost that other people have told, but they don't know each other, so they would have no way of knowing that. And in fact, when we come back, I want to talk to you about a ghost that I know about named Sam the Bellman. And Sam the Bellman up at the Banff Springs Hotel in Canada is an amazing story. And so many people have told the story that when I started investigating it myself, I realized they didn't know each other, but it happened to them. So when we come back, we'll talk about that. Then I want you to talk to me about the Hotel Mozzolini because we're here right now. And I want you to, like, try not to scare me too much, okay?
Okay, absolutely.
All right, when we come back, Larry Montz from the International Society of Paranormal Researchers, who's already scared me enough in this city, but he's back to scare me again. And when we come back, we'll talk about Sam the Bellman. I'm telling you, this story, I actually believe. I'm the biggest cynic going. Back with more from the haunted Hotel Monteleone in New Orleans, Louisiana. Peter Greenberg and Larry Montz back right after this.
Now to talk to Peter Greenberg at 1-888-887-3837 or email him at peter@petergreenberg.com. This segment of Peter Greenberg Worldwide is proudly brought to you by
Continental Airlines. With over 260 destinations in more than 50 countries, Continental makes it easy to create your own worldwide tour. Continental Airlines. Work hard. Fly right.
Now back to Peter Greenberg.
It's 43 minutes after the hour. Peter Greenberg here with you from the Hotel Monteleone in New Orleans, Louisiana, taking your calls on this Halloween weekend at 888-887-3837. That's 888-88-PETER. If you can't get through on the phones, you know the drill, boys and girls. Email me to peter@petergreenberg.com with your name, phone number, question, or travel problem. We'll solve it right here on the air. We've been talking with Larry Montz from the International Society of Paranormal Research. And, Larry, I promise you the story of Sam the Bellman, so here it is. Are you ready?
Oh, great. I'm ready.
Here it comes. For years and years and years, Sam the Bellman worked at the Banff Springs Hotel up in Alberta in Canada. It was one of those great Canadian railroad hotels. And the uniform that he wore in those days was like a faded red jacket with a little like a pillbox hat and sort of light blue pants. And in 1967, he retired. And then he said to everybody, oh, but I'll be back. Well, about 4 years later, he died and then apparently kept his word because he's back. And the weirdest part of the story is that so many people who don't know each other, who stayed there as guests at the hotel, tell this story as it's happened to them. That as a journalist, you have to say, wait a minute, if all these people who don't live in the same city, who don't know each other, who've only been to the hotel once, are telling the exact same story, just maybe Sam really is back. So here's the story. They call to get their bags picked up when they're in their room, and they call down to the bell desk, and about 5 minutes later, there's a knock on the door, and they open the door, and there's this ancient-looking guy in a faded red jacket and blue pants and the pillbox hat who takes their bags and kind of hobbles down the stairs. And they go down 5 minutes later to get their bags in the lobby to check out. The bags are there, but he has disappeared. And everybody tells the same story. I mean,
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's a cool story.
That's how we determine, you know, many times whether or not, you know, the client is telling the truth, because we do research and we find that, exactly like you're saying, many others know the same exact information, have had that experience.
Okay, but in the world of the paranormal, I mean, I'd have to say New Orleans has got to be one of the capitals.
Yeah, I think so. For, you know, per square inch, absolutely. With all the turmoil and the deaths that have occurred in that city, wow, it's very active.
I said at the beginning of the show, they should have shot the Thriller video with Michael Jackson here, because the graves are already above ground. You don't have to build anything; just knock on them and they come out.
That's right. Yeah, that's what people say down there. But you know what? The ironic part of a cemetery, Peter, is that generally cemeteries are really not haunted at all, because entities have the ability to travel. So would you stay with your corpse or go someplace else?
Well, I want frequent cemetery miles. I'd be out the door in a second. What are you talking about?
Exactly. That's why we find generally that they're really not haunted, except for, you know, movies and TV and everybody. everybody runs around looking for ghosts there. So it's pretty funny.
All right. So in your experience, having been here as long as you have, what's the most haunted place in New Orleans?
Oh, boy. You know, that's really hard to say. But I can tell you that the Hotel Monteleon does have quite a few entities there. Le Petit Theater, the State Museums are active. I mean, it's really hard to say, you know, absolutely this is the number one site in that city. I tell you, it's very tough.
See, I have this vision. There's a great little bar here at the Hotel Monteleon called the Carousel Bar, and it actually revolves around
That's
the bar.
Right.
And I'm convinced that late at night when no one's looking, there's some partying going on down there with apparitions and visions and ghosts that you can't believe.
See, I wouldn't doubt that because that is such a great bar and such a great atmosphere. And the entities in the hotel do like to reside on certain floors, but I'm sure they walk around and check out and see what everybody's doing, you know.
Now, wait a second. You call them entities. Help me out. What does that mean?
An entity is the, you know, since I'm a parapsychologist, this is the technical term for a person, a ghost that, a person, let me explain, a person who has died, who has not left this earthbound plane and gone on. So an entity is a conscious being that remains behind.
So basically what you're saying is that this hotel, there are a lot of people who haven't checked out.
That's right. And others who checked in
asked for the very late checkout, like never. How about never? Would never work for you?
Absolutely.
Amazing. All right. And you give tours here, don't you?
No, actually, you know, Peter, we were doing ghost expeditions, if you remember.
We did one ourselves.
Those
I remember
were
that.
Classes,
yeah.
Training people with equipment. However, we have now developed and released the official Paranormal Guide app. So we decided to use the technology and use, you know, the Apple iTunes store.
I love it. We've now got a parapsychology paranormal app, courtesy of Larry Mons from the International Society of Paranormal Research. Larry, thanks again, man. We'll be seeing you back with more from the Hotel Monteleone and all of their entities right after this.
The Peter Greenberg Worldwide phone lines are open now, so call us at 1-888-88-PETER. That's 1-888-887-3837. This segment of Peter Greenberg Worldwide is proudly brought to you by
Travel Guard Insurance. For travel insurance plans for the unexpected, see your travel agent or visit TravelGuard.com for affordable travel insurance protection from Travel Guard.
Now back to Peter Greenberg.
It's 52 minutes after the hour, coming to you from the Hotel Monteleone in New Orleans, Louisiana. Taking your calls at 888-887-3837. That's 888-88-PETER. If you can't get through on the phones, then you're a ghost. No, I'm kidding. But bottom line is, we just talked to Larry about paranormal and parapsychology research about entities. Well, if you wanted to find out the history of those entities, of course, you're really dealing with the history of the culture and the people of New Orleans. And who better to talk about that than Teresa Devlin from the Historic New Orleans Collection. Hi, Teresa.
Thank you so much for having me.
You got it. So tell me this. I mean, there are museums and there are museums. And I mean, we've done this show, for example, from the World War II Museum, which is a very cool place. There are other great museums, the zoo here. We've done wonderful things out at the Audubon Zoo and, of course, the aquarium back by the river. But not that many people know about the collection, so tell me about it.
Well, we're trying to change that every day. But the Historic New Orleans Collection is a museum, a research center, and a publisher. And we are focused on the history and preservation of the culture of New Orleans.
But what do you have in there?
Well, our research center.
We got stuff in there. Yeah.
That's right. But our research center is kind of the heart and soul of the whole institution. And it essentially serves sort of as a library. We have manuscript holdings. We have art, artifacts, government records. And this goes all the way back from the earliest days of settlements. So you're looking at 300 or three centuries.
So you're talking about the French.
The Native Americans.
And the Indians, yeah.
Absolutely.
What would you say if I went in there tonight? On a ghost hunting expedition. But if I went in there tonight, what would be, say, one of the great gee whiz things I'd see there when I had no idea about this?
I think one of the things we would probably show is we have a 1731 manuscript of a gentleman that was coming over from France with the Company of the Indies. And, you know, his personal account, his he sketched the boat. He was quite the rogue and played many a trick on different people and once he got here. But his story, I think, is, you know, it's just essentially an everyday person, but remarkable experiences, remarkable accounts. And those firsthand accounts, that's really what we specialize in, and that's what we, I think, one of the things that we're most proud of.
Now, my first experience about New Orleans, before I ever got here, was watching stuff in the movies, of course, and watching stuff on TV. And everything was about riverboat gamblers. Do you have riverboat gamblers there?
We have a lot about riverboats. I'm not exactly sure if we have a lot about riverboat gamblers. They may not have left quite the paper trail because, you know, that could get a little sticky.
And you still have the riverboats.
That's true. We have some great holdings, images, artifacts from the steamboats and riverboats. And it's a great period of New Orleans history.
When you got involved, what was the first thing that you learned that you went, I had no idea that these people were doing this stuff?
I think one of the things that I don't know that I fully appreciated was the mix of people that were in the city. I mean, obviously, you knew you had the French, you had the Spanish, you had the Creole communities and African communities, but there's Germans, there's, you know, pretty much there's Irish, there's the entire almost European communities had holds
here. And what's interesting about that is that they don't always had directions to get here. A lot of them got here because they got lost.
Some respect, yeah. And, you know, to come to Louisiana, we have a propaganda poster of what Louisiana was like in the early colonial periods, and you see this very tropical kind of paradise.
We try to encourage people to come.
Yes, you do. There are mountains in the background of this this image.
Mountains.
Oh yeah.
And so you were misleading people from day one.
That wasn't us. That was the Europeans. That would have been the French at that time.
Don't tell me they had snow-capped mountains.
I don't remember if there's snow on the mountains,
okay.
But they're still far higher elevation than anything that we have here. What they don't have are swamps. What they don't have are, you know, mosquitoes.
Snakes.
Going everywhere. And so it is, I always, you know, anyone that has experienced a summer in New Orleans, even now, knows that it is
pretty sweltering. Let me explain something about the summer in New Orleans. The mosquitoes are so large that they have other mosquitoes with large orange cones landing the other mosquitoes. They're actually directing them to the gates. I believe that's the way it works.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. And, you know, this isn't a time when the swamps have been drained. This is pretty much an urban environment. You, there are places where you will find far worse, but in the early days of settlement, this must have been an incredibly difficult place to live. And but, you know, we're grateful, and they did. And
so basically,
more
saying is the French and the Germans came out and said, well, the mountains, and they weren't here.
They weren't there.
Cool.
They weren't there, but they sure did bring a lot of
So basically,
influences.
You actually have the history of deceptive travel advertising. It's right there at the collection.
We have some of the earliest, you know, that poster is certainly one of the earliest travel propagandas
Wow.
out there, if you want to
When
call
did it
that.
Change? When did they get rid of the mountains?
Beats me. I think once more and more people came, they probably started to realize that they're, you know, it was still always touted as a paradise and as
Sure.
a, you know, an appealing place to live. But then you start to look at who these people are, and they were individuals that were may have been, they were looking for better. So wherever they were, probably wasn't the best of scenarios.
Well, the cool thing is you got 350,000 photographs, you got 35,000 library items, 2 miles of documents, and one very misleading poster. Am
That's
I right?
That's right.
All right.
And you can see it anytime in our Louisiana History Galleries. It's part of our permanent tours.
Cool deal. All right. Teresa Devlin from the Historic New Orleans Collection, thank you for joining us. I really appreciate that. I'm going to go out there and find those mountains. I'm loving that. All right, that music means we're out of time for this hour. For those stations leaving us, have a great rest of your Halloween weekend. Go trick-or-treating. I never knew that Tootsie Rolls owned the world, but that's what they're selling out there. We'll be back with more of Peter Greenberg Worldwide from the Hotel Monteleone with their entities right after these messages. Hang in there, everybody.
You've been listening to Peter Greenberg Worldwide. Visit our website at www.petergreenberg.com. Live from around the world, it's time for Peter Greenberg Worldwide with America's number one frontline travel news journalist. the phone now and call 1-888-887-3837. That's 1-888-88-PETER. And now, the man who travels over 400,000 miles each year, the travel detective, Peter Greenberg.
And welcome aboard Peter Greenberg Worldwide on this Halloween weekend. Hope you're having a wonderful time wherever you are. We've been living on airplanes, of course. Last week, we were coming to you from the newly reopened but very historic and legendary Savoy Hotel in London, and then crossing just a few time zones to get to where we are right now. Get out your maps, boys and girls. 29 degrees, 59 minutes north, 90 degrees, 15 minutes west. We're coming to you from the Hotel Monteleone in New Orleans, Louisiana, a lovely old historic hotel that some people say is haunted. How appropriate for the time of the day that we're doing this show. 888-887-3837 is our number, 888-88-PETER. And if you can't get through on the phones, you know the drill. Email me to peter@petergreenberg.com with your name, phone number, question, or problem, or ghost sighting, and we'll solve it right here on the air. Speaking of that, how many hotels have you stayed in that you heard were haunted? How many hotels have you stayed at that you knew were haunted because you personally experienced the ghost? I have to say, I've stayed at places from where they shot The Shining, in Colorado. Remember, here's Johnny. I've stayed at the Hotel Del Coronado, which has a legendary ghost. I've stayed at so many hotels that are supposedly, haunted, and nothing's ever happened. And that's not because I'm a cynic, because one thing did happen to me once that I can't explain, and it's not explainable at all. I'm not going to share it with you because you're never going to think of me seriously again if I do. However, I do find it entertaining. And, for example, it's not just hotels. There are haunted wineries out there. There are haunted former prisons. If you really want to go get scared out of you know what, go to the Eastern State Penitentiary, the former state penitentiary outside of Philadelphia. They're actually giving tours of this National Historic Landmark. And, this is where Al Capone used to reside. All sorts of interesting stuff. And, of course, the name of their haunted exhibit is called Terra Behind the Walls. Ooh. The Otisaga Resort, where we've done this radio show from before, in the legendary town of Cooperstown, New York. Of course, home of the Baseball Hall of Fame. Supposedly, many ghosts reside there. And they're actually doing a nighttime candlelit ghost tour. There's the McCallum House in Mendocino, California. They think that's haunted. If you know the people in Mendocino, they're stoned so much all the time. They drink, they smoke so much pot. They themselves are ghosts. So I'm not buying that one, but they claim it's haunted. It's a 19th century home, and it's haunted to this day by the ghost of Donald McCallum, the son of the original owners. Strange noises, doors opening and closing, and lights turning on and off. I'm telling you, people are just stoned there. There is, in the Poconos, there's a haunted house. Well, everything in the Poconos is haunted. If you go there and see those champagne cup beds, I mean, that would scare me alone. But then there's a ghost winery. How about that? It's in St. Helena in Northern California, a haunted winery. The list goes on and on. Then there are haunted theaters. And, of course, every castle in Scotland. I'm sorry. Every castle in Scotland claims they're absolutely haunted, no doubt about it, and they love to tell stories there. I mean, the Scots and the Irish, all they love to do is tell stories about the ghosts. And why is it that every ghost is named Johnny? Can somebody explain this to me? I mean, can we be a little more original than just Johnny? I'm sorry. In Inverness, Scotland, there's one. And they have a special spooked quarters in there called the Haunted Room. I'm looking for a guy named Johnny there. And here's one. And this is I'm sorry, I ain't buying this one, but people actually believe in it. The Queen Mary, which has been in Long Beach, California since the late 60s, is supposedly haunted. It's rusting, I'll give you that. But they actually do daily ghost tours, and there it is. And, of course, the hotel I was talking about from The Shining, the Stanley Hotel in Estes Park, Colorado. And there's a special room there. I'm not going to tell you the room because so many people have stolen the door sign from that room that they now sell replica of the door sign with a number in the gift shop. So you can actually have it on your own door and do, here's Johnny. Anyway, there's that one. Hey, another report came out this week which is not about ghosts, but it is sort of haunting. From Yahoo.com, a list based on the airline quality report, the AQR report, which actually covered 18 domestic carriers. It's a list of the airlines that are named America's Meanest Airlines. How about that for a title? Okay, in descending order, U.S. Air. It was cited as having the I'm just reporting this now. Don't write letters to me, okay? It was cited as having the rudest flight attendants and serving the worst food. Wait a minute. They serve food on U.S. Air? Wow. Okay, that's haunting. Followed by American Airlines. They have a reputation of bad on-time performance and mishandled baggage. Next in line, Alaska Airlines, which even though it had a great on-time performance, had the worst mishandled baggage reports. Well, you know, it's Alaska. And then an airline that certainly has a problem. This is an airline that intentionally disconnected its customer complaint phone line last year, United Airlines. Now, the good news is it's now going to be merging, as you know, with Continental Airlines, an airline that has a really good culture among its employees and staff, and hopefully it can only get better. And then, here it is, number one is the meanest airline, according to the AQR, Delta Airlines. It scored the worst. And one of the reasons why it scored the worst is because of its subsidiary regional carrier called Comair, and the other one that they use, Atlantic Southeast Airlines. It had the largest drop in passenger satisfaction, and it also was number one in delays from major airlines. 78% of flights arriving on time, that means 22% didn't. And, of course, nobody likes their baggage fees. So there you have it, the five meanest airlines in the United States, according to the AQR reports. And coming up when we come back, of course, to talk about that and many other things, our good friend Joe Sharkey from the New York Times. You can read him every Tuesday in the New York Times. A lot of interesting stuff that Joe's been reporting on lately. Some of it, not too surprising. Airlines, of course, reporting the largest third quarter profits in recent history and getting even worse for us and getting even better for them. And the one story that nobody ever wanted to talk about because luxury was a dirty six-letter word. Guess what? Business jets are about to make a comeback. I know that doesn't really affect too many people listening to the show, but you need to know about the fact that it's a sign of perhaps an economic turnaround. And my favorite title, which is I talk about this all the time. I talked about it last week. I'm going to talk about it tonight and tomorrow and the next day, and hopefully with Joe, my love affair with pre-clearing customs whenever you're traveling. And you can do it in Ireland, you can do it in Bermuda, you can do it in the Bahamas, you can do it in Canada. Why can't we do it everywhere, especially when we have high volume of traffic? Well, coming back to talk about that when we're coming back is Joe Sharkey from the New York Times. As long as he hasn't been kidnapped by a ghost. Back with more from the Hotel Monteleone in New Orleans with a lot of their ghost stories right after this.
The Peter Greenberg Worldwide phone lines are open now, so call us at 1-888-887-3837. That's 1-888-88-PETER. Got a travel question or comment? Need advice? Jump on board now by calling the show at 1-888-88-PETER. That's 1-888-887-3837. Once again, here's your host, Peter Greenberg.
And it's 18 minutes after the hour, coming to you from the Hotel Monteleone in New Orleans, Louisiana, a supposedly haunted hotel. We'll talk about that a little bit later in the show. If they allow it, they will. We were talking just earlier before we came back about the five meanest airlines in America, according to the AQR, the Air Quality Report, which comes out every year. And somebody, I think Joe Sharkey might have something to say about that as well. I don't think he's shy about that. Joe Sharkey from the New York Times. Did you hear the meanest airlines? Do you agree with that?
Which is the meanest airline?
Well, the meanest airline, it starts in descending order. It started with U.S. Air and ended up with Delta. You're already laughing.
Some of those regional carriers that they're affiliated with.
And that's what's killing them. Yeah.
I fly U.S. Air a little more now than I used to since I now live in Arizona. And, I'm going to say it. I like U.S. Airways, too.
No, it's okay to say that. I've flown U.S. Air a couple times in the last 2 weeks. And in fact, I actually fly them on an average about two or three times a month, and I haven't had a problem with them.
No, no, I haven't either. I think that it's the old America West culture here, at least in the West, and I just don't have any gripes with them. And you were talking about Continental, which is an airline that I used to fly a lot when I lived in the New York area, and I still fly occasionally. In fact, I just flew them from Chicago last night, and as you know, Chicago was a mess with the weather, heavy winds yesterday, and O'Hare was a mess. And you know, the people who work for Continental are just radiate good cheer by and large. And there was this gate agent who was just dealing with all these people complaining and griping. I mean, just coming at her, and she was doing it with such grace. That I went to her and I said, her name was Christina. I said, Christina, how do you do this with all these people complaining and griping, and you just maintained your good cheer? She said, Mr. Sharkey, I go home and I drink heavily.
Now, you see, Joe, she was not telling you the whole story. She'd been drinking since 2 yesterday afternoon.
That's an appropriate response to some of these
Actually, you know what? The best thing I've ever seen, I actually saw this happen. People think it's apocryphal, but it's not. It happened at the old Denver Stapleton Airport years ago when a flight canceled, and people were lined up at the counter to try to get rebooked, and there was one gate agent there, like your friend, who was just trying to deal with everybody, and all of a sudden this guy comes out of nowhere, pushes in front of line, and slaps his ticket. I mean, he just literally pushed everybody out of the way, sticks his ticket down on the counter, and goes, I need to be on this flight, and it's got to be first class. And she said, sir, I'll be glad to help you. I've got all these other people here. I'm going to take care of you. Don't you worry about a thing. And he looked at her, and he goes, do you have any idea who I am? And this woman, without hesitation, how cool was this? Reaches down, grabs the microphone for the entire terminal, goes, attention everybody in the terminal, I've got a man here at gate 17 who does not know who he is. And this guy looked at her and dropped the F-bomb.
Oh.
Right? And everybody heard it. Wait, you got to wait for her response. And she looked at him and said, sir, you're going to have to stand in line for that too.
Yeah.
And I'm telling you,
that was a pretty good rejoinder, though.
And you know what? Everybody, not only that, everybody applauded. Nobody cared about the delay anymore because they loved her response. You got to love that.
Right. Look at this jerk.
I know.
You got to love it.
One of the things that's going on, we've just seen the airlines report third quarter earnings.
Yeah, happy days are here again.
Yeah, record profits, Joe.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's time to start a new airline or something.
Uh-oh. Right, just when you thought it was safe to go out to the airport.
Right. How long will this last?
Well, remember, the airlines managed the miraculous. For 10 years, they managed to lose $50 billion. So 2010 was the year that they designated as comeback. You know, let's catch up. Let's play catch up. And they have.
And of course,
though,
Peter, you have to add in the amount of revenue they've been raising from the fees. I think it's about, this year it's going to be $10 billion. I mean, that really adds up, and their prosperity is partly resting on that. Although there's no question about it that the airlines have got capacity under control. Good for them, not so hot for the rest of us, because it means that, you know, there are fewer seats, fewer flights. But yeah, they're seeing better days, and that's, you know, by and large, that's good for all of us, because we want a viable air transport system.
Well, we want a viable air transport system with as much competition as possible, because competition leads to better – forget the fares. It also leads to better service.
Yeah.
And if these airlines don't feel they have to compete because they already have a humongous amount of market share, then there's no incentive on their part to provide service or deals.
Yeah, I think that's where we're headed.
Yeah, that's not the good thing.
That's why you want a business jet.
Oh, okay. Is that your segue to discuss business
travel?
That's
right. Yeah, because I was at the business jet convention, the
NBAA,
National Business Aviation Association, and there's still, I mean, that industry is still in dire trouble, you know, and of course there are a lot of jobs involved. I mean, their sales of deliveries of business jets this year are about 700. Compared with about 1,300 2 years ago. And they're not really going to pull out of that mess for another year or so. But where they are pulling out is at the very top level, the $65 million jets, like the new G650. What a beauty that is. They had so many people, potential customers, wanting to look at that baby that they had to rope it off. And,
wow.
And Bombardier introduced two new super long-haul Global 7000 and a Global 8000 that cost $65 billion each. And that's only with, you know, standard equipment. That doesn't include the...
No white wall tires, huh? No white wall tires and no heater.
No white walls. Big party, though. Lavish party.
Sure.
Cirque du Soleil entertainers. And, I mean, it was like the old times had returned, at least in that very high end of the business jet world. Now, you know, of course, I don't ride business jets. I ride... I fly in coach. The last business jet I was on crashed.
We know.
So,
we know that's true.
You know, that was sort of a message to me that this is not your lifestyle, pal.
That's right. You were punished for living life in a good land.
Let's just say it was intensely focusing.
All right. Well, let's shift gears to one of my favorite topics, which is pre-clearance, because every chance I get to pre-clear, meaning if I'm in Canada, if I'm in Bermuda, if I'm in the Bahamas, if I'm in Ireland, that means I actually go through U.S. Customs in that country, and everything gets done there so that when I land in the United States, I'm not stuck in another two-hour line going through customs, number one. My bags automatically connect to my ongoing flight, and I'm not schlepping. It's the best.
I remember you telling me about that years ago, and I had never done it until fairly recently when I was at Shannon on a connecting flight, and you go through U.S. Customs there. And I happen to have bought in London. I bought three Cuban cigars. I smoke three cigars a year, and I bought three good ones. I mean, expensive ones. And it's really great, and you know, to go through the pre-clearance because it's very fast. You don't have there's none of that kind of long hassle. But the woman who was the customs agent there reminded me of the nun I had in sixth grade, and she looked me right in the eye. And she said, "You wouldn't be happy to be carrying any tobacco products, would you, Mr. Sharkey?" And I thought, oh boy, here we go, because I am no good at telling lies, and I just caved. I said, "Yeah, I have three." So they made I caved like a cheap suitcase. They made me destroy them there. So that was the downside. Was at Kennedy I could have strolled right through with my.
I would just like to say on behalf of the show, I'm not traveling with you anymore.
No, don't. Well, you know that.
but on balance, though, you saved a lot of time by pre-clearing.
Absolutely, no question about it. And it was painless. And aside from the fact that, the cigars are contraband, so they had every right to they were good-natured about it. They like felt it was a shame to have to destroy the cigars.
Well, thank God. Well, you know,
yeah,
Joe, thank God.
It was great,
And thank God she didn't ask you about all the cocaine you were carrying.
Yeah, I'm incapable of committing a crime, not because I'm moral, just because I'm incapable of lying. I always get caught.
But in all seriousness, I just hope that U.S. Customs and Border Protection can cut some more deals in more high-volume foreign countries like the United Kingdom, like Paris,
absolutely,
where we can actually then pre-clear then, because it would save so many people, and not only that, so much money in terms of fuel burn, misconnected passengers, misconnected bags. It's so brilliant, right?
Well, and also on a very serious level, as you just mentioned, I mean, I had cigars, but I did get a pretty good look over. You know, they gave me a pretty good look. See, so if I were a doer of bad deeds, I was much more likely to be caught there than I think at Kennedy.
Well, I just would like to thank that woman for stopping the criminal deeds of Joe Sharkey from the New York Times. I think that she has saved us from you.
All right.
But no, we're not really safe from you, Joe, because we see you every Tuesday in the New York Times, and I really appreciate that. Joe Sharkey from the New York Times, cigar smuggler. Oh, my God. But pre-clearance, that's the way to go. Back with more from the Hotel Monteleone in New Orleans right after this.
To participate in the program and speak with Peter Greenberg, call 1-888-887-3837 or visit petergreenberg.com. This segment of Peter Greenberg Worldwide is proudly brought to you by
Avis. Avis, we try harder.
Now back to Peter Greenberg.
33 minutes after the hour, coming to you from the Hotel Monteleone in New Orleans on this Halloween weekend. Taking your calls at 888-887-3837. That's 888-88-PETER. If you can't get through on the phones, you know the drill, boys and girls. Email me to peter@petergreenberg.com with your name, phone number, question, or problem. I remember one of my very first visits to New Orleans. I came down on the old Southern Crescent, one of the all-time great train rides you could ever have, from Washington, D.C., all the way through the South, and it ends, of course, right here in New Orleans. And checked into the hotel, and a friend of mine called me that night at around 10 o'clock at night, and she goes, "What are you doing later?" I'm going, "It's 10 o'clock at night. What do you mean, what am I doing later?" She says, "No, what are you doing later?" I said, "What do you mean by later?" She says, "Be in the lobby at 1 in the morning." And I'm like going, "Okay." And I get in the lobby at 1 o'clock in the morning. He says, "Okay, come with me." We walk 3 blocks. The next thing you know, I'm on a riverboat at 1 o'clock in the morning or at 1:15 in the morning going down the river with all of her friends and the Neville brothers. I went, now that's New Orleans. And, of course, I'm a big boat nut, so being on a riverboat at any time for me is a thrill. And joining me now, Captain Clark. Actually, Clark, we call him Doc Hawley, of the Steamboat Natchez. Hey, Captain.
Good evening, sir.
And good evening to you. Isn't it nice to know that there's still boats like yours on the river?
Thank goodness. The steamboat is really what built New Orleans to what it finally became, the second largest port in the United States. And steamboats just sort of founded the place.
Now the Natchez is a relatively new boat, isn't it?
Yes, she's only 35 years old. That's young for a riverboat.
It sure is.
I think the boat you must have ridden that night was the president.
You know what? I think you're right. And
yes.
all they were doing was partying all night long on the river. And in fact, I talked about this earlier on the show. When I was growing up watching TV, there was a television show that was on NBC. It starred Darren McGavin.
Oh yes.
And it was called Riverboat.
Right.
And I loved it because every week they were just going to different ports and there was always drama and always crazy gamblers on the river and some ne'er-do-wells. And yet he was the captain. He played the captain of the riverboat. Loved it. He was playing you. Yeah, he was playing you. So what's the oldest boat on the river right now?
The Belle of Louisville, which is owned by the city of Louisville, Kentucky, Derby Town. And she will be 100 years old in 2015.
And they're still operating her?
Still operating her. If Mark Twain came back to Earth today, he'd feel right at home.
Does the Bell ever get down here?
Never. He hasn't been down here since the 20s.
Wow.
Yeah.
Now, I know for a fact in Cincinnati they still have riverboat races.
Yes, they do. They have an celebration called Tall Stacks. It's kind of a takeoff on tall sails.
Yep.
And tall masts, or whatever that was in New York. Tall masts, I think.
Or the tall ships, yeah.
Cincinnati did Tall Stacks. And,
right.
We had the Natchez up there at the last one.
Now, to be fair, the Natchez, even though it's 35 years old, it's not the only steamship that's been on the river called the Natchez, right?
Oh no, this is the ninth one.
Wow.
Ninth one, yes, sir. The most famous one was the one that raced the Robert E. Lee back in 1870, and that was Natchez number 6.
but who's counting? Hey, but you know what's really interesting to me, and it's also somewhat sad. And unless I'm miscounting, the Natchez is only one of two steamboats left, right?
That's it. There's two steamers left on 12,000 miles of navigable river connected to the Mississippi. And there are only two real steamboats left, the Natchez at Louisville. The Belle of Louisville at Louisville, Kentucky, and the Natchez here in New Orleans.
Now, here's the thing. What about all the riverboats that were taking passengers? They did Chapter 11, didn't they? Like the Mississippi Queen and...
And the Delta Queen, American Queen, yes, sir. And
where are those ships now?
I worked on all of them.
And where are those ships today?
The Delta Queen is now a motel in Chattanooga, Tennessee, way up on the Tennessee River. And I think the Mississippi Queen is going to be reduced to a barge. And the American Queen is over in Beaumont, Texas, in the Maritime administration. See, she was built with the MARAD loan.
Oh, I understand.
So when they folded up, she went to the maritime fleet with a lot of ships, and here's one paddle-wheel steamboat mixed in with all the ships.
So how often do you take the Natchez out?
3 times a day.
Wow.
Sightseeing trip here on the river, and with music and good New Orleans food, cooked right on board with New Orleans, cooked by New Orleans cooks.
And the most amazing thing is, this is a big ship. It can hold, what, 1,600 people?
1,600, yes, sir.
That in itself is amazing. Absolutely and amazing.
She paddles in and out of here and has been doing it now for 35 years. And the boat is 35 years old, but her engines are 85 years old. They came from a vintage steamboat, and they still... There's no planned obsolescence with steam. It keeps on going.
Well, so do you, sir. Captain Doc Holly from the Natchez, I'm glad you joined me. And I got to come back and visit you sometime, because with only one or two left, I better hurry up. I got to get out there and do that. Thanks again for joining us. When we come back, we'll be back with more of what all the things your pilot won't tell you. How about that? Back with more from the Hotel Monteleone in New Orleans right after this.
Call now to talk to Peter Greenberg at 1-888-887-3837 or email him at peter@petergreenberg.com. This segment of Peter Greenberg Worldwide is proudly brought to you by
Continental Airlines. With over 260 destinations in more than 50 countries, Continental makes it easy to create your own worldwide tour. Continental Airlines. Work hard. Fly right.
Now back to Peter Greenberg.
43 minutes after the hour, Peter Greenberg here with you on this Halloween weekend, coming to you from the Hotel Monteleone in New Orleans, Louisiana, and taking your calls at 888-887-3837. That's 888-88-PETER. If you can't get through on the phones, you know the drill, boys and girls. Email me to peter@petergreenberg.com with your name, phone number, question, or problem. We will solve it right here on the air. The minute I saw this story in Reader's Digest, I said, I got to get this guy on the air. What a cool idea this was. The fact that you were able to go to 17 airline pilots from around the country to get straight answers, and the title of the piece was The 50 Secrets Your Pilot Won't Tell You. Ouch. Well, I want to know all of them, and joining us right now, the features editor at Reader's Digest, Andy Simmons. Hey, Andy.
Hey, Peter. We're here to tell you all about it.
I'm ready to go. Well, I suppose the first secret they want to tell you is don't eat the food. No, I'm kidding.
Yeah, bring your own food.
Yeah, but one of the things that I saw in the piece that you know has been an issue with pilots for a long time, and most passengers don't even come to grips with this because they don't know about it, is that they're sort of angry that they're, because the airlines want to save money on fuel and save money on extra weight, they may not be boarding, according to some pilots, enough fuel to get you where you need to go with enough extra left over to give you enough, you know, basic circling time to get to an alternate airport. They're not happy with the amount of fuel they're carrying.
No, they're not. Now, this is not really a safety issue because they do land in other airports if they need to. But
right.
It's a pain in the butt because, if you're right, if there is a weather problem, they do have to circle. You know, chances are there's a good chance they may have to go to another city to land.
Now, one of the secrets that your pilot won't tell you that I've heard from a number of pilots, and it's a big issue, in fact, the National Transportation Safety Board is holding hearings on it now, is crew rest.
Right.
And that pilots are literally saying to you, and they said to you in the story, we are really exhausted.
Yeah, well, they can fly up to 16-hour shifts, which is a lot longer than what truck drivers have to or are allowed to drive. And as one pilot said, told us, you know, truck drivers, if they get tired, they can pull over. So we can't pull over at the next cloud. You know, we got to keep flying.
Well, you know, when you talk about 16-hour shifts with truck drivers, that reminds me of old George Raft movies where they're popping amphetamines on the highway late at night just to stay awake with double vision, you know.
And you know what happened in that movie. They got into a crash and Humphrey Bogart lost an arm.
That very good. You win nothing for that, but you're absolutely correct. But bottom line here is no pilot's going to tell you he's tired. I mean, they're not going to get on the PA and say, hello, ladies and gentlemen, welcome aboard American Airlines Flight 505. I'm so sleepy. I mean, they're not going to say that.
They're not going to yawn. But you know what? There's a lot of things that they're not going to say. They're keeping a lot of things away from us, basically to protect us. You know, if they're heading into a thunderstorm, they're not going to say, "Hey, there's a huge thunderstorm out there." You know, they'll say something like, "It looks like there's some weather." You know, they'll couch these problems. But even with that, you're right. So what they do is they go to us. They tell us, hey, look, there's a problem out there. We publicize it, and hopefully Congress will do something about it.
Well, you know, there's an old line. Every pilot talks like Chuck Yeager. Mm-hmm. Well, hello, everybody. They all talk, you know, they all talk with this, like, somewhat fake Southern drawl. And people always tell me, you know you're in trouble when the pilot gets on the loudspeaker and starts any sentence with, well, folks.
How true. How true.
Exactly.
Well, they're trained. They are trained to sort of, you know, keep that upbeat smile, you know, and you say, hey, everything's fine, you know, and they use little, you know, code words.
Now, one of the things in your story that I totally agree with, but I'm it's sort of counterintuitive to me, is when do you wear your seatbelt? Because, you know, planes were designed with seatbelts when planes took off at 85 miles an hour and landed at 85 miles an hour. They don't do that now. They take off at 160 miles an hour and land at 150 miles an hour. And I've always argued that the best time to wear your seatbelt is not during takeoff and landing. The best time to wear your seatbelt is in the air, because if you hit a pocket of clear air turbulence, you're going to break your neck. You're going to go flying.
Right. And the pilots in our article agree with you. And but they also say, too, you know, turbulence, one of the things about turbulence is that we fear turbulence a lot more than they do. You know, they look at it as just sort of a uncomfortable roller coaster ride. You know, we look at it as, you know, are we going to go down? And they're saying, no, not at all. You know, no one really goes down because of turbulence.
Well, you know, it's interesting. It all gets into why we face forward when we fly. It because it gives us this false sense that we actually have some control over where we're going.
Right.
You know, I mean, if you look at most military aircraft, the safest place to fly is to face rear, not to face forward.
Well, one of the great things about this article, too, is, you know, I always thought that there were certain areas that were safer to fly in, either the back or the front or the wing. And the pilots here say, you know what, it doesn't matter.
You know,
you look through the history of airplane crashes, it's all equal.
Exactly. Andy, stay with us. When we come back, I'm going to ask you about some of the things they told you not to worry about. More with Andy Simmons from Reader's Digest and all the secrets the pilots won't tell you right after this.
The Peter Greenberg Worldwide phone lines are open now, so call us at 1-888-88-PETER. That's 1-888-887-3837. This segment of Peter Greenberg Worldwide is brought to you by
Travel Guard. Visit travelguard.com/unlucky. Tell us what makes you the world's unluckiest traveler, and you could win a $10,000 dream vacation. Brought to you by Travel Guard.
Now back to Peter Greenberg.
52 minutes after the hour, coming to you from the Hotel Monteleon in New Orleans, Louisiana, on this Halloween weekend. We've been talking with Andy Simmons, the features editor at Reader's Digest. Great story they've got out. The 50 secrets your pilot won't tell you. And, you know, one of the things I saw in that story, which I was very happy to see, is the pilots essentially letting parents know how to be more responsible travelers, that it's not a good idea to hold your child who's under two in your lap.
Right. Well, they basically say if something does happen, your child suddenly becomes a flying projectile, which is a very frightening thought.
Yeah, we covered United Airlines Flight 232 in Sioux City, Iowa. And even it was remarkable that anybody survived that crash. But what was most amazing was it was a Saturday, and there were so many parents traveling with their kids under the age of two, they didn't want to spend money for a seat. So it was technically legal for them under FAA rules to hold that child in their lap. And when they did that hard landing, it's exactly what you said, Andy. Those kids became missiles.
Well, you know what was interesting, too, in the story is they said the reason for it was because it's considered safer this way than to drive. So they want to encourage people to take.
Oh, you know what? This gets me so angry. And I went on the air when this happened. The FAA did all the research after the NTSB already said you need rear-facing restraint seats for kids under the age of two based on how much they weigh. And it was incontrovertible evidence about survivability in crashes. And then the FAA said, oh, we want to study it before we make a ruling. There was not a whole lot to study because the NTSB had already done it, but then the FAA studied it. They came up with baby crash test dummies. They ran them in on 16G landings, which are considered very hard but survivable landings. They came up with the exact same results that the NTSB did. And then here's what the FAA said, Andy, and just drove me nuts. They said, well, even though parents should be responsible and do this, we're not going to require the airlines to do this, because if we did, they'd only raise their fares, and the people who would otherwise fly would drive and be killed in automobile accidents.
Exactly.
And my announcement to the people that I talked to at that point was, hey, guys, when I want the FAA to talk about highway safety, I'll ask them. That has nothing to do with highway safety. It has to do with airline safety. And you know you have a problem. You know you have a solution. Implement it. And they won't do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, you know, costs are everything.
I know. It's called economic benefit.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, when the FAA is confronted with a clear safety solution against what it was going to cost to fix it, 9 times out of 10, they side on the side of economic impact, and it's not fun.
No.
All right, but now, what should you not worry about?
Well, you know, I talked about turbulence before, but, you know, lightning is also something that people get scared about. And it just, you know, we have pilots telling us that they've been hit by lightning twice and never anything happening, anything bad happening. In fact, one guy says that the most frightening thing that ever happened to him regarding airplane flight was the van he took through LAX, you know, through the Los Angeles airport. He said, you know, this, you know, being on a plane is not scary. And then the other good thing is, you know, we've always heard that breathing in the air on the airplanes is dangerous for you. And what we're told here is that that's really not true. Most of the airlines filter the air through hospital quality HEPA filters. And in fact, it's cleaner air than most many office buildings have.
I know, although there are always those stories, some of them may be apocryphal, that if the passenger in seat 2C has the flu, all of a sudden 15 passengers in the back of the plane are going to get it because the air is circulated to them.
Right. Well, I think I saw that movie, too, right after the Humphrey Bogart film. And, and I'm sure, you know, to a degree, there's always some truth to something like this. But it really, at the end of the day, it seems to be much more safe than I think it's been given credit for.
All right. What was the one thing that most of the pilots told you drove them crazy?
Well, again, I think it's sort of this lack of knowledge of about turbulence, about things like that. It's, you know, for example, one of the things that they suggested is if you are petrified about turbulence, sit in the middle, you know, sit over a wing, because, you know, the airplane acts sort of as a seesaw. And if you sit in the front or in the back, you really get rocked a lot more than if you sit in the middle. So I think that was one of the things that drove them a little crazy.
And last but not least, of course, the silly rules about what you have to do by putting your laptops away and taking your headphones off and putting away all your electronic devices below 10,000 feet.
Right. Well, you know, one of the pilots here was saying that, you know, people don't understand why they can't use their cell phones. You know? But what happens is if everyone started using their cell phones all at the same time, they can actually get a false reading on their instruments.
Yeah, but you'd have to have 200 people making a call to one person to do it. You know that.
Well, it could be a very, you know, popular fellow that they're calling. Who knows? They,
exactly.
I guess, you know, the thing is they just don't want to take any chances.
You know what? The only thing that I think is a good rule is you shouldn't be wearing your headphones during takeoff and landing, because if there's an emergency, you want to be able to hear instructions from the crew.
Well, you know, also, too, that's one of the reasons why they keep the shades up often, you know, so that they can actually see outside in case there is an emergency landing.
Yeah, exactly.
I never knew.
See, isn't it interesting? We've learned something from this, Andy.
I know. That's why we do these articles. Just, we don't care if anyone else learns. We learn.
Ah, there's a secret you just revealed. That's the 51st one. Okay. Andy Simmons, features editor at Reader's Digest. Of course, the name of the story, The 50 Secrets Your Pilot Won't Tell You. And, of course, one of them is, don't buy the pillow or blanket. It's not worth it. All right, Andy, thanks for joining us. That music means we're out of time for this hour. For those stations leaving us, have a great rest of your Halloween weekend. Go out there and trick or treat. Go get some candy corn. I miss the candy corn. All right, when we come back, more from the Hotel Monteleone in New Orleans, Louisiana. Peter Greenberg here from Peter Greenberg Worldwide. Back with more right after these messages.
You've been listening to Peter Greenberg Worldwide. Visit our website at www.petergreenberg.com. Live from around the world, it's time for Peter Greenberg Worldwide with America's number one frontline travel news journalist.
Around the world, the trip begins with a
Get on the phone now and call 1-888-887-3837. That's 1-888-88-PETER. And now, the man who travels over 400,000 miles each year, the travel detective, Peter Greenberg.
And welcome aboard Peter Greenberg Worldwide. Hope you're having a wonderful Halloween weekend wherever you happen to be. Of course, I'm in Ground Zero for Halloween. I'm in New Orleans, Louisiana, staying at the Hotel Monteleone and taking your calls at 888-887-3837. That's 888-88-PETER. And, of course, if you can't get through on the phones, you know the drill, boys and girls. You email me to peter at petergreenberg.com with your name, phone number, question, or problem. We will solve it right here on the air. I've always said this. I feel it. It's palpable that there's a subterranean energy here in New Orleans that is not just over Halloween. It's 24/7, 365. And there are apparitions, ghosts, and goblins, and things that go bump in the night. And my next guest here did a great book, which, of course, speaks to all of that indirectly, if you will. The name of the book is New Orleans Cemeteries, Life in the Cities of the Dead. Hello. His name, Robert Florence, who's very much alive, I might add.
I think so. Last time I checked.
Last time you checked. I mean, I always walk around those cemeteries. You know, you go out to Commander's Palace and you just go across the street and you are in the St. Louis Cemetery there, which is just so amazing because every grave is out, above ground. Everything tells a story. I mean, it goes back generations.
Absolutely. I mean, those cemeteries, all the tombs are above ground, and it's as if each above ground tomb is, it's like books on a shelf, and each spine you see just has volumes of stories within it.
Enough to actually do a book, I see.
Enough to do, you know, thousands of books. I mean,
yeah.
That's ridiculously concise, that book there. But something you said earlier, which is really appropriate, whether it could be the cemeteries, it could be the you know, all these notable reported hauntings, it could be voodoo. But you said there's a palpable
subterranean energy.
Right.
Yeah.
And people who aren't superstitious or spiritual whatsoever comment upon that all the time.
I have to tell you, this has happened to me. Didn't happen today because there was a car that was picking me up, so he was meeting me. He knew I was coming off. But every time I've taken a cab at the airport, these guys don't know me. I mean, they don't recognize me. I'm telling you, I'll get in the cab with the guy, so you're back, huh? I'm going, and he actually knows where I'm going. It's like, who are you? How do you know this? Like, woo! I mean, it's like, right?
Right, right. And not that it can be explained, but people feel, you know, sense that spiritual energy here, whatever it is. But back to the cemeteries, this is the only city in the country, and to my knowledge, one of the only cities in the world whose cemeteries are a major travel destination.
They
tourist.
Are, yeah.
I mean, think about it. If you go to New York or Los Angeles, great city, Chicago. I mean, unless you're an aficionado of cemeteries, you don't go to cemeteries.
In L.A. you do because of the celebrity nature. People go take a tour of Forest Lawn.
Right.
They want to see who's buried there.
Marilyn Monroe. Right.
Right. Well, she's not buried there. She's buried somewhere else.
Okay.
She's not at Forest Lawn. But I know that, you see, because I had to go see that for myself.
Right.
Once.
Right.
Here, it's more than once. People go back time and time again.
Well, I think that's a good point in that the cemeteries are emblematic of the city in many ways, and hence the subtitle of this book, The Cities of the Dead. The Cities of the Dead, I mean, one obvious reference there is that the cemeteries look like small-scale cities being above ground, but it's more than that. They reflect the city in every way, in very big ways, small ways. You know, every aspect of the history and culture is reflected, and that is definitely one way.
Yeah. I mean, without, you know, sounding like a bad Mel Brooks movie, but no one does voodoo like you do here. I mean, it is like, it's palpable. I mean, because the history is you're always lifting the veil here. You're always lifting the veil, aren't you?
Absolutely. That's another good point. I've heard this city, and I would agree with this, that the city, there are layers and layers and layers. And getting back to what you said about...
I mean, you do a cemetery voodoo tour, don't you?
We do a cemetery voodoo tour. We do several tours that pertain to spiritual...
Right. Nobody does voodoo like you do.
No. Well, the thing about voodoo is I don't think anyone does voodoo. I mean, we could say we do voodoo. Voodoo is here. Voodoo is a reality and a historical fact coming from religious traditions brought into colonial Louisiana by West African slaves and how those traditions crossed over with Roman Catholicism.
Are you telling me there's nobody currently in New Orleans doing voodoo?
No, I said there are no other cities.
That,
I mean, if you don't go to Minneapolis or some other city and say this is a voodoo city, I mean, I don't think there's any city you call. But New Orleans just.
So if you're in Minneapolis, and say we're a voodoo city, eh?
Right, right. I mean, you know what I mean. I don't think people associate. But getting back to the layers, you just said that, you know, going to these cemeteries bear repeat visits. That's one way in which the cemeteries reflect the city. And that if you click with New Orleans, if it registers with you, which, I mean, I've never met any traveler who does not like New Orleans, it really bears repeat visits. You can, I believe when you're traveling, even some great places, you can exhaust them at some point. But wouldn't you agree, you've been back many times, the more you know about the place, I think you just realize how little you know.
Oh, because the people who live here full time, they have their own way of nodding. They have their own way of a little, you know, look in the eye. They have their own way of smiling, which basically says, "Yeah, we know. You don't know. We know."
Right.
I mean, Rod Serling, if he were alive today, he'd be living in New Orleans. I'm telling you, the Twilight Zone is here.
Yes. Yes.
Absolutely. I mean, the guy on the wing of the plane, I remember that episode. But forgetting that, he would be here because he would be saying, consider this. You know, it's more about the beads and the go-cups and drunks on Bourbon Street. There is a history here. When you lift the veil, it just goes deeper and deeper and deeper.
Absolutely. And it keeps writing itself. You know, I mean, if you look at some of the things that have happened to New Orleans in the last few years, I mean, Katrina being an example, such a watershed event in American history. And there was a time there three or four years ago, where people here and people outside of New Orleans wondered, is the city going to endure? And not only have we endured, we're better off and stronger than we were 5 and 6 years ago. And all that did was add another layer of curiosity to the city.
There's already a Katrina Museum now.
Right. They just opened the exhibit. I went. It's magnificent at the Cabildo.
What's amazing about that exhibit? I mean, things that we would just take for granted in a disaster are on display there, like Fats Domino's piano.
Right.
How about that?
Well, I think the point of that exhibit, which I completely agree with, is there's rough stuff in it, but it's more about the overcoming of of the adversity. And I think one thing that Katrina made people here. I think the general consensus here is, yes, it was terrible, but I think most people here feel a sense of strength from it. You know, if we got through that, what else can... And then, of course, there was the BP oil spill, but, you know...
Exactly.
No, but New Orleans is doing great. I mean, it's had a magnificent... a magnificently fascinating history for 250 years, but it's just gotten more interesting. Because remember, you mentioned the layers. There's another layer and another layer.
Exactly. Robert Florence, of course, he'll give you the tour. And, of course, I love your business card. It starts with cemetery, and it ends with hauntings. How appropriate. I'm loving that. All right. By the way, the website, www, of course, tourneworleans.com. And no one does voodoo like he do. Thanks, Robert. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Peter. Great to see you.
When we come back, more from the Hotel Monteleone in New Orleans with your calls and a whole lot more coming on Peter Greenberg Worldwide right after these messages.
The Peter Greenberg Worldwide phone lines are open now, so call us at 1-888-887-3837. That's 1-888-88-PETER. This segment of Peter Greenberg Worldwide is proudly brought to you by
Continental Airlines. With over 260 destinations in more than 50 countries, Continental makes it easy to create your own worldwide tour. Continental Airlines. Work hard. Fly right.
Now back to Peter Greenberg.
18 minutes after the hour, Peter Greenberg coming to you from the Hotel Monteleone in New Orleans. Taking your calls at 888-887-3837. That's 888-88-PETER. If you can't get through on the phones, you know the drill, boys and girls. Email me to peter@petergreenberg.com with your name, phone number, question, or travel problem. We'll solve it right here on the air. And as we do every week at this time, we encourage you to go to our website. Yes, we hired consultants to come up with this name, petergreenberg.com, for one very important reason, to get the comprehensive list of all the aid and relief organizations doing all that essential hard work down in Haiti, down in Western China, out in Chile, and, of course, in the Gulf of Mexico, especially in Haiti, where there's just been an outbreak of cholera. The work continues. It's not going to end soon. They need all the help they can get. We're dealing with a generation at least of rebuilding efforts there. if not longer. And what's great about this list, you might surprise yourself to realize all the different ways you can get involved other than just donating money, donating your time, your energy, your expertise, your brain, and your physical being, and getting down there and doing a volunteer vacation. It's the best gift you can give yourself because you're giving back to so many other people in the process. Please check out that list and surprise yourself, and let us know what you're doing. Email me to peter@petergreenberg.com. We'll put you on the air. We'll get you down there. Give us a report of what you're doing, where you're doing it, and most importantly, sometimes even, how you're doing it. We were just talking with Robert Florence, of course, who's a great historian and does great tours here in New Orleans, the author of the book on life of the cities of the dead here in New Orleans. He reminded me of a great quote from Mark Twain about New Orleans, which says, "There is no architecture in New Orleans except in the cemeteries." Now, I know a lot of people who disagree with that now, but there's certainly a lot of architecture in the cemeteries. And let's segue to that with the architecture of airline fees. And our next guest from the Los Angeles Times, the assistant travel editor, Jane Engel. Hey, Jane.
Hi, Peter. How are you?
I'm doing just fine, and happy Halloween weekend wherever you happen to be. I presume you're in Los Angeles.
Yes, I am.
Well, you know, we just got through looking at the third quarter results from the airlines' record profits. And by the way, I don't think anybody would fairly deny them that. They deserve it. They haven't been in the black in quite some time. But the question is, how do they get there? And it's based on ancillary fees, isn't it?
Well, I think it is based to a substantial extent on those fees. That and the fact that the airlines really haven't increased their capacity very much. They've really held it down, even as the traffic's begun to creep up. It's the old supply and demand. So the fares are up a bit, but you're right. It's the fees that are making a big difference here.
Absolutely. And what's also interesting is, and there's just been a settlement recently in the cruise industry, by the way, which I think is near and dear to my heart. It comes on the act of the Americans with Disabilities Act about, you know, it's one thing to say that your ship is ADA compatible. And by the way, I don't know a ship in this country that's berthed here that isn't, that hasn't been properly ramped, that they don't have a number of handicapped accessible cabins, and that they make the ship accessible. But here's the rub. What about the ports they go to? What about the shore excursions? Are they handicapped accessible? And the recent court case ruled in the favor of people with a disability, saying they did not get the service to which they contracted for because they couldn't take many of the shore excursions because nothing was handicapped accessible. Now we got the issue that you and I were just talking about fees, whether it's baggage fees, for example. Wait a second. Are baggage fees for disabled travelers fair?
Well, yes, because, you know, that is a very good question to ask, and it's one that doesn't always have an easy answer. I mean, the fact of the matter is that people who are wheelchair users, they can't reach up to those overhead bins. And we had a guy write into us who has a bad shoulder. He can't lift that bag up into the overhead bin. Who gets stuck with the job of doing that? And if no one will help you, is it fair to charge you a checked bag fee?
Exactly. Well, you know, I have to say, the wildest thing going on right now is that because nobody wants to pay the airlines to check their bags, they're coming on these planes carrying everything they possibly can that has wheels on them because they claim that they're portable when in fact those bags aren't portable, they're transportable. And of course the overhead bins fill up immediately. And then the airline has to check the bags anyway.
Right. I mean, this is a real issue. And as these planes fly fuller and fuller, they are now flying as full as they've flown in a decade. Those bins get filled up.
I know. So what's the solution? You could beat the airlines at their own game by, if you can get through security with your checked in bags, and you get to the gate, then they go, "Oh, I'm sorry, you can't do that. We'll have to check them for you." Then they check them for you for free.
Right. And there are some people that play that kind of brinkmanship.
And they get away with it.
Yeah, I think they do in a lot. I think they do in a lot of the cases. But, you know, I think in the long run, I mean, if you didn't really want to check your bag in the first place, you know, if you would really prefer to keep your bag with you, then you're kind of taking your chances there. You've got to make sure that if you're going to play that game, that whatever you carry on that plane, it better be something you don't need during the flight. And it had better not be a 17-hour flight where you've got your medications in your bag that suddenly went to the checked baggage.
All right, so now let me ask you the tough, bad question, Jane, and I'll let you off the hook if you don't want to answer it, but I'm going to ask you now, not as the assistant travel editor for the Los Angeles Times, but as a traveler, when you have the airlines reducing capacity, which means fewer planes, which means fewer seats, which means fewer flights, which means that every plane that I've been on, that you've been on in the last year and a half has been completely full, where the law of supply and demand kicks in and the fares have nowhere to go but up, are the airlines in the travel business anymore, or are they in the transportation business, and are we just human freight?
Oh, yeah. Well, I think sometimes as you sit in the seat, you can feel a bit as if you are a piece of human freight. I think at the same time, even with the fairly modest rises that we've had in airfares, except for the holidays, boy, that's a whole nother topic, but, you know, even with these modest raises in fares, we're still paying pretty darn low fares, when you look at the broad history of it, adjusted for inflation and the kind of incomes that we have. We're still paying pretty darn good fares, and I suppose that's the trade-off you get.
Well, it's interesting. You know, my very first trip with my parents overseas, I was 12 years old, and my mother is one of those women who kept everything. She kept her 1956 tax returns just in case somebody wanted to see them. And after my mom passed away, I actually discovered a file folder from that very first trip where she kept every single hotel bill, every single receipt, the original itinerary typed on onion skin paper by the travel agent, all the airline tickets, even the room numbers from the hotels. And I looked at what we had paid on this trip when I was 12 years old. Adjusted for inflation, those are extremely expensive airline tickets. I mean, they were like, by today's standards, for a coach ticket, it was like $1,500.
I know. It is just amazing. And, you know, despite the fact that fares have gone up a bit, we've seen some incredible fare sales for the non-holiday periods going into the fall and winter. American Airlines in this month is, at one point in a short-term sale, offering $198 round trip, coast to coast, plus tax. Even with a tax, it's, about $219. I mean, that's amazing. Those were fares we saw 20 years ago.
I know, but remember, in the airline business, low fares are always started by the weakest competitor.
Hmm.
And then the other big airlines match it because they can lose money longer than those guys.
Right.
That's how they do it. You know, there's another statement for that. It's called predatory pricing, but you know what? The Justice Department hasn't filed a case on that ever in my history. I wish they would. But right now, we're not into cost cutting right now. We're not into fare cutting. We're into basically the airlines for the first time in a long time declaring huge profits.
I mean, they're not necessarily historically large, but it is the first time it looks like as if really virtually all of the major airlines have really returned to profitability for the first time in about 3 years. The last time, that we really saw this was about 2007 before we began to have the downturn. So they certainly are on a roll compared to what they've been over the last 3 years.
That's right. But remember, they still have a motto that somebody has to get rid of. You know what their motto is right now?
Tell me.
We're not happy until you're not happy.
Well, well, in fact, complaints are up. Funny you should mention that.
Yes, they are. Complaints are up, but wouldn't they be? You put enough rats in the sardine can or enough sardines in the rat cage. How about that for mixed metaphors and everything else? You're going to have people complaining.
Yeah, but also what is weird about that is that whereas the complaints are up, we are, they're actually doing a better job handling our bags. They're not bumping as many of us, and this is something that tends to happen when you have fairly modest airline traffic, nothing too crazy. And so at least we can be glad that we've got a couple of good things going for us.
All right, a little bit of good news there from Jane Engel, the assistant travel editor for the Los Angeles Times. And by the way, Jane, for appearing on this program, there'll be a $50 surcharge.
No, I'm outraged.
All right, we'll be back from the Hotel Monteleone in New Orleans right after this. So that'll be $25.
To participate in the program and speak with Peter Greenberg, call 1-888-887-3837 or visit petergreenberg.com. The Peter Greenberg Worldwide phone lines are open now. So call us at 1-888-887-3837. That's 1-888-88-PETER. Once again, here's your host, Peter Greenberg.
33 minutes after the hour, coming to you from the Hotel Monteleone in New Orleans, Louisiana, taking your calls at 888-887-3837. That's 888-88-PETER. If you can't get through on the phones, you know the drill. Email me to peter@petergreenberg.com with your name, phone number, question or problem. We will solve it right here on the air. For those people who think they know about New Orleans, of course, they know about Mardi Gras, Fat Tuesday. They know about all the events that happen on Bourbon Street just about every night with a lot of drunken kids with go-cups and throwing beads. However, there's a whole lot more to New Orleans than Mardi Gras. In fact, my next guest knows all about that because she's involved with the French Quarter festivals. And her name is June Fallow. Hey, June.
Hi, Pete, and I am very
happy.
Did
you just call me Pete?
I did.
Nobody has ever called me Pete.
I said that same thing about 15 years to you.
I know. Thanks, man. And I busted you for that then, too.
Yeah, I looked much younger then.
I know. But here's the thing. I mean, there's hardly a week in this town that there's not at least some festival going on.
Oh, understatement. And what's so unusual about the city of New Orleans and their festivals is a lot of times it's a lot of volunteers putting all this together just to create a fun time for people to come visit New Orleans.
I know. I'm going to give you something that I learned here in New Orleans, especially around Mardi Gras time, but it's all year long, because there's a band here that I'm, like, fascinated with. You ready? St. Aug.
Oh, my gosh, my favorite
band. I told you, St. Aug.
To lead a second-line parade. I work at the Quarter Two Sisters restaurant. We have an entrance to Royal and Bourbon. And how many times do I take corporate events and have them second-line down Bourbon Street with St. Aug right in front of
now
them?
Now, explain. I know St. Aug, but explain St. Aug.
St. Aug, for all those people listening, where you have your typical high school bands that
play
at football games
and
so forth. This is not your typical band. This is a band that actually marches down the street, but dances down the street while playing and making this jubilant festival for everyone that's watching them. And you could hear them four or five blocks away, and you would immediately start running to go see who that was playing the music.
And because that's who that is. And you got to say it the right way. It's St. Aug.
St. Aug.
But you also have a great Halloween parade here, too.
Oh, yes, we do. Blaine Kern has developed a Halloween parade now. It is on Saturday, October the 30th, and it is just as fun as a Mardi Gras parade, but more in the Anne Rice type of theme and so forth. So you got to come down to New Orleans
now,
year-round.
Every year, but we said the Anne Rice type of themes. Help me out with that. What does that mean?
Well, it's your vampires. It's your little ghost. It's everything about New Orleans and the old history and the snake charmers and the voodoo and so forth.
How long have you lived here?
All my life.
All right. So would you say New Orleans is haunted?
Oh, I guess I have to say that's true. I work in a building that was built in 1732, and there's a few things I've seen in the 42 Sisters.
Like?
Sitting at the front desk about 18 years ago, and we have all these flags that have flown over the Cabildo from ever since they were run by French, British, or whatever, and I'm sitting there, and there's nobody in the carriageway, and all of a sudden one of the flags jumps off the wall. We run over there and we go, oh, my God, thank God nobody was walking by there because it's the main entrance. And we go and we look at it. There's no broken string. There's no nothing. And what flag was it? The Confederate flag.
Okay.
That's one. The second one was in working upstairs on the third floor of the building because I created a sales department. We got busy where we needed more employees. They decided to remodel.
Now you're messing with the spirits.
Now you're really messing with the spirits. And there was a fireplace. And here we are sitting there, no workers around, no nothing. And here come bricks flying out of the fireplace. Just rolling out of the
fireplace.
And
how fast did you run out of that room?
We did run out. I won't lie to you. We just looked at each other and we said, okay, the sisters are not real happy about this.
All right, but you're still there.
Yes, still there.
See, 20 years later. They haven't gotten to you yet.
No, not at all. But this city has so many stories like that. I'm just one of a million stories in this city right now. And as far as festivals, French Quarter Festival is not, I want you to understand, this is an organization of 1,000 volunteers. There is a board of 20 people. We do French Quarter Festival in April. We do Sachemo Festival in August. And at Christmas time, for 30 days, we do Christmas New Orleans style. And you can find all of this at FrenchQuarterFestivals.org. But at Christmas,
and it's all volunteer.
It's all and it's all free. And people don't understand that the hotel room rates in December are extremely reasonable. The airline flights, everything down here. So you can come down in St. Louis Cathedral. Do you know that Ellis Marsella does a free concert at 6 p.m.? On one
cool.
of those nights,
cool.
Ronnie Cole does one, the Zionine Harmonizers, all to support the city.
And all the flying bricks you can witness. Jude Fowle, I love this, from the French Quarter Festivals. Give me the website again.
www.FrenchQuarterFestivals.org.
All volunteer and all free.
And three festivals. With French Quarter Festival has 18 stages. Christmas New Orleans goes on 30 days a week, including free cooking.
30 days a week.
30 days out of the month. And there are
calm
free,
down, June.
There are free cooking demonstrations also.
You got it all out. You got it all out. We're done, June. Stop it. We'll be back with more from the Hotel Monteleone with the flying brick queen herself. No, actually, Peter Greenberg here saying we'll be back right after this.
Call now to talk to Peter Greenberg at 1-888-887-3837 or email him at peter@petergreenberg.com. This segment of Peter Greenberg Worldwide is proudly brought to you by
Continental Airlines. With over 260 destinations in more than 50 countries, Continental makes it easy to create your own worldwide tour. Continental Airlines. Work hard. Fly right.
Now back to Peter Greenberg.
43 minutes after the hour, coming to you from the Hotel Monteleone in New Orleans, Louisiana. Peter Greenberg here with you. You know, I've been coming to New Orleans so long that I can actually, you know, basically tell you all the coolest restaurants, at least in my book. And, you know, they range from the traditional ones, the iconic ones like Commander's Palace, to August, to Luke, to Susan Spicer's restaurants, which I love. Biona, of course, which is her first one, which I love the most. And then there's another restaurant, which if you don't know it's there, you won't realize the history there. But it goes back 105 years. And the very first time I was involved in going there, it was by accident. I just walked in one night, and I had a pair of jeans on and a shirt, and that didn't cut it. They ended up loaning me clothing to be able to eat there, not because it's a high-society restaurant, but because it has a tradition there that you will be dressed to eat. And you know what? They were right. And the waiters have worked there for 100 years. The chefs have worked there for 100 years, except for the next guy who's on this show, because he's only 29 years old. Actually, he's a little older than that, but he started when he was 29 in 2006. He's the chef at Galatoire's, and his name is Brian Landry. Hey, Brian.
Hey, how are you doing?
I'm doing fine, and, you know, I literally every time I come to New Orleans, I will make a stop there, because it's just one of those places you need to walk in, and don't just look around. You also look up because of the high ceilings and everything else.
Exactly.
Are you with me, Brian?
I'm here. Can you hear me?
Good. I can hear you. So give me an idea, because people think they understand New Orleans cuisine. Define for me the cuisine at Galatoire's.
Galatoire's is probably the quintessential Creole restaurant, meaning we specialize in the New Orleans style of French cuisine that's been being cooked there for the last 100 years. So, you know, some of the famous dishes would be shrimp remoulade, poisson meunier, amandine.
Wait, stop right there.
Okay.
Explain poisson amandine.
Okay. Poisson meunier, amandine would be a fish that's sautéed and finished with meunier and toasted almonds, meunier being a brown butter sauce.
Right. Actually, so what you're basically saying to me, it's cholesterol on a plate.
Of course.
Okay. Just double checking. Okay. I mean, everything at Galatoire's, I have to tell you, you gave me a bread pudding one night that I had to get a stretcher. I loved it so much.
That'd be the banana praline bread pudding.
Yes, it would.
Yes.
Heavy duty banana praline bread pudding.
Yeah.
I know. But what would be your signature dish there?
I don't know that we could narrow it down to one. I mean, one of the things Galatoire's is famous for is the seafood we get. We have great relationships with our purveyors. You know, we have fresh shrimp delivered to our door on a daily basis and shrimp feed, and the crab meat we get is phenomenal. And then all kinds of different fin fish, from trout to redfish, pompano. So we specialize in seafood. So shrimp remoulade, crab meat maison, oysters Rockefeller, the list goes on and off.
Yeah, and you serve oysters more than just oysters Rockefeller, don't you?
We do. We also have oyster artichoke soup. Oyster and brochette is probably one of our most famous dishes, which is oysters and bacon that are fried and drizzled with a little bit of that meniere.
As I said, the stretcher is waiting
simple.
At the door. Yeah, the stretcher is waiting at the door. The coolest thing, you're going to laugh when you hear this, Brian, but the coolest thing of walking in there without a jacket, they give you a jacket to wear so that if you eat too much and you drool or you spill it, it's on your jacket, buddy.
Yeah, we got a bunch of loners at the door.
So. I love it. And 105 years, right?
105 years, yeah. Just celebrated our anniversary on Bastille Day.
Amazing, amazing. And how often are you changing the menu? Not that often, right?
The main menu remains pretty constant. We do lots of special dinners and wine pairings and things of that nature, but the main a la carte menu, for the most part, does not change.
What's the one thing that's been on that menu since time immemorial? What's the one thing?
I don't know. I mean, a lot. There's a dish that we serve called chicken Clemenceau, which was named after a French statesman from World War I, George Clemenceau. So that dish has been on there a good long while. It's a roasted chicken. Then it's topped with Brabant potatoes, sautéed mushrooms, green peas, and garlic.
And butter.
Not all too right. much butter in that.
All right. Brian Landy, the chef at Galatoire's. You got to check it out, and they'll loan you a jacket. We'll be back with more of Peter Greenberg Worldwide right after this.
The Peter Greenberg Worldwide phone lines are open now, so call us at 1-888-88-PETER. That's 1-888-887-3837. This segment of Peter Greenberg Worldwide is proudly brought to you by
MedJet Assist. If you're injured or hospitalized while traveling, MedJet Assist will arrange medical transportation directly to the hospital of your choice. Travel safely and be smart. Get MedJet Assist. Take trips, not chances.
Now back to Peter Greenberg.
52 minutes after the hour, coming to you from the Hotel Monteleone in New Orleans, Louisiana. Taking your calls at 888-887-3837. That's 888-88-PETER. And if you can't get through on the phones, you know what to do. Just email me to peter@petergreenberg.com with your name, phone number, question, or travel problem. We'll solve it right here on the air. We've just been talking to the chef at Galatoire celebrating its 105th birthday here in New Orleans. Well, the Hotel Monteleone has it beat. Next year, it celebrates its 125th birthday. And joining us now, the historian from the hotel and a good friend of ours, Andrea Thornton. Hey, Andrea.
Hi, how are you doing?
I'm doing just fine. I mean, 125 years in New Orleans makes you guys young.
I'm telling you, we really are. We were amazed at how many of our neighbors are also celebrating that or more.
So you go back 125 years at least. You started, what, as a 64-room hotel?
That's correct. It's a commercial hotel.
And what has changed? I know that you weren't around when that happened, thank God. But I mean, what's changed in all these years? That because it's very interesting in the hotel business, as you know, Andrea, to maintain a certain sense of heritage and culture when you have rampant development and you have a tourist economy that always wants to just go bigger and better and better and bigger.
Well, yes, there's a lot that's changed with the hotel as far as the structure itself. The one thing that has remained the same, which is pretty amazing, is that the hotel has stayed in the Monteleone family for four generations. And, I mean, the hotel started out, as you said, Antonio Monteleone, who was a cobbler with a place of business right across the street from the hotel, purchased the hotel in 1908 and then added 30 rooms onto it I'm sorry, he purchased it in 1886 and then added 30 rooms onto it in 1908. And it continued on from one son to the next until it's the 600-room property that we know today.
And, of course, you've got the Carousel Bar, which I think is the cutest thing going.
Oh, the Carousel Bar is absolutely fantastic, and it's truly the icon of the hotel. People love it. They see us in their painting, and they get all upset, thinking we're going to change everything around.
You sit at the bar, and you actually rotate around the room.
That's correct. It's 24 seats that rotate. It was built after an actual Danziger is the name of it, carousel. It was shipped from California to New Orleans in 7 pieces. And it rotates once every 15 minutes, or some people say once per drink.
Yeah, but who's counting?
Yeah, exactly.
Now, of course, this is Halloween weekend, so we've had some of the paranormal people already on board saying that this hotel is haunted. So I've got to ask you, Andrea, is it haunted?
Oh, yes, indeed it is. But we're very fortunate because they're all very friendly ghosts. They're mischievous.
Oh, stop it. Come on.
But, they've got the two children that play with each other. And we have actually a number of guests who have not only seen some of the happenings, but they don't mind talking about it, too. So we have a whole list to give to some of our media people.
Well, of course, after enough drinks and rotations at the Carousel Bar, you're going to admit to anything.
That's right. That's exactly right.
I mean, but it's always interesting that the ghosts are either young children or in Ireland it's a guy named, Johnny.
Yeah.
Or it's a woman who's left at the altar or who killed her husband. Those are the basic themes. So who are your ghosts? You have young kids, right?
We do. I think the most famous one is Maurice Berger, and I'll give you the quick version. Maurice came to stay at the hotel with his parents who went to the opera, and this was back in the turn of the century, and he his parents became on their way back, they were murdered. He contracted scarlet fever and ultimately, unfortunately, passed away. And so it said that he walks the halls looking for his parents still. He was with his parents left him with his au pair, and so that's what the story is that he looks for his parents up and down the halls. And we have, like I said, numerous people that have seen Maurice or played with Maurice or insist on being in that 14th floor room that they swear he's there and talks to them and plays with them. So.
And, Andrew, does that room have a number?
It does.
And that number is?
It is 1462.
Maurice's room. Wait a minute. Oh, my God. No, I'm kidding.
I love it. That is the most talked about room in the hotel. It's either the most requested or people say, please don't put me on the 14th floor. So we either get a lot of requests for the 14th floor or no one wants to be there.
You see, most people think the 13th floor is unlucky, but you got them beat. You go one step above it, and it's Maurice.
That's right. Absolutely.
Unbelievable. Well, 125 years old, still just doing great stuff. And, of course, the Carousel Bar, what a place to be. And everybody in town knows it because they go hang there. It's great. Andrea Thornton, thank you for joining us again. And, of course, that music means we're out of time for the show. We're going to go check out the 14th floor and Maurice. No, we're not. But you know what? You can. I want to thank Jeff Ryder, of course, our engineer back in New York. Mike Worrell in California. Homer Ash is doing the boards right here in New Orleans for us. Shelly Gontrescu came in to produce it from Seattle. And, of course, all the folks here at the Hotel Monteleone. Thank you so much for helping out. Woo! Happy Halloween, everybody. We'll see you next week from another distant remote location.
You've been listening to Peter Greenberg Worldwide. Visit our website at www.petergreenberg.com.